All right, if you're anything like me, you hate running out of food on a trip. It's like a big fear. And so I'm a big fan of snacks during an adventure. And one of my absolute favorite go-to snacks are Wonderful Pistachios. You may be familiar with pistachios and the brand Wonderful Pistachios, but if you're not, they are one of the highest protein nuts out there. 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios is 6 grams of protein. That's 10% of your daily value. It also includes 9 essential amino acids, and they come with a ton of different flavors, varieties. There's a spicy version, there's lightly salted, there's no salted, there's so many. And every time I go on an adventure, I'm not even lying, I take an entire bag with me. And what's cool too, I love having the Wonderful Pistachio in shell, because then that almost gives me something to do and focus on as I'm paddling or biking through the really monotonous parts of the adventure. Every great adventure is going to have plenty of boring moments, and it's nice to have something to do and also something that is giving you some fuel, like Wonderful Pistachios. So they're one of my favorite adventure snacks, favorite road trip snacks, and definitely leave me feeling better than a lot of other snacks you can turn to. So if you want to learn more about how to fuel your next adventure with Wonderful Pistachios, go to WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Whew, getting up a little late this week. Sorry about that. Just been behind. Lots of work, lots of family stuff. Trying to get back on track. It seems like every time I travel for work, I don't think it's going to throw me off, but it ends up just the ripple effects. It takes weeks to get over. It's so funny. Travel for work used to be a lot of fun, you know, when I was in my early 20s. Now it's like, oh my gosh, this is a hassle. But we're getting back on track. And what's cool, this episode's definitely worth the wait, because Jeanette is an amazing communicator, and as you're going to hear, has a ton of experience. We're going to learn a lot in this episode, but it's just going to be a little teaser of her book that's out, The Outdoor Leader. And this is connected to the episode from last week with Jerome Rand, where we talked about learning to share your outdoor and adventure experiences and knowledge and to start inviting others with you. No matter if you're just, you like going out, enjoying time alone in nature, or you like doing huge, big adventures that take multiple months, becomes your life. At some point, it is your responsibility to start sharing that knowledge, sharing that story, and helping others get into this, because a lot of those extremely basic questions that we all had when we started, well, guess what? People around you probably have those questions right now as they get started. So it's your responsibility to help that next generation, whether it be your family or friends or people on the internet or whoever, to get into these sports. Because as we know, the benefits in every aspect of life are there are so many, so numerous. And we got to make sure other people know about this. So sharing your adventure and outdoor knowledge is crucial. And when you do that, well, guess what? You become an outdoor leader kind of just by default. So we're going to talk about some of the misconceptions of leadership. What does it mean to be an outdoor leader? And also how to be better at being an outdoor leader. And I'm just going to ask questions based on my own curiosity. We're not necessarily going to follow, the chapters of the book or anything. We talk about, little parts here and there. But if you really want to learn more, I have a copy. I recommend you get a copy. We're going to do a giveaway. So everyone that reaches out to me in the next 24 hours wanting a copy of the book, I will put you all into a pool. Not actually, but if you were around here and we had a pool, I don't have a pool. But we're going to put you all in a pool, and then we're going to randomly select a name to win the book. So, I've done book giveaways before, and people are like, hey, it's not fair with people on different time zones and listening at different times of the day to just have the first person, because Anyway, all that to say, if you reach out to me in the next 24 hours, whether that's email, Mason at Adventure Sports Podcast, Instagram, Adventure Sports Podcast, Facebook, any of those places, your name goes in a pool and I will randomly select you, then I'll be in touch. But you can find the Outdoor Leader at mountaineers.org. Our friends over at Mountaineers, they release a ton of amazing books a year. We interview a lot of those authors. But this book is a must-have for anybody who's learning to share this knowledge and learning to invite others in the outdoors, or if you actually are an outdoor leader as your job, you're a guide of some sort, or you have this as part of your, you know, you're a teacher that, you know, takes international trips or national park trips during spring break. There's so many scenarios that this would work for. So anyway, I've been talking for 4 minutes straight. That is about 3.5 minutes too much. So let's go ahead and dive in and hear from Jeanette Stalsky. All right, folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. Today, we're talking to, you know, somebody who is going to teach us about outdoor leadership. And, you know, I know that's the name of the book, The Outdoor Leader. But Jeanette, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Well, I always ask this first, and I think I know the answer, but I want to double check. Where are you coming from today?
Yeah, today I'm calling in from Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's a bright, sunny day. We don't get a lot of sun here, and it's out, and it's the start of March, so life is good.
So tell us about Ann Arbor. Are you from there, or are you from that area?
You know, I have lived in Ann Arbor for over 20 years now, but I'm originally from Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is the west side of the state. And I pull out my hand and point to it, but it really is only that Michigander joke of using your hand to show what's tied. Yeah, there you go. So, but yeah.
Somewhere in Michigan.
You got it. You got it. So yeah, so I've been down here, came to school and we live here, and like I said, spring is coming, so up in the Midwest.
That's awesome. So tell us about what is the outdoors like in Ann Arbor? I don't think about Ann Arbor a lot, but here's one of the big themes of this show is shedding light on places that you don't often think is outdoorsy, but are truly magical. I live in a place like that, and so many of our guests are. What is Ann Arbor like?
Yeah, that's a kind of a funny point, and I think that actually has come up in my outdoor career. Most people would have thought, you know, why don't you live out west or in the mountains? That's a spot where I'm always drawn to, but the Midwest has just really tremendous things here. So Ann Arbor's a town of, I guess, over 100,000, but we've got a lot of green spaces. We've got a river that is actually just around the corner. We've got green, you know, running ways and pathways and rails to trails. But you do need to drive. If you want to climb, it's, you know, 4 hours over to Canada or 7 hours down to the New or the Red River Gorge. Ice climbing up in the Upper Peninsula is 7 hours north from here. But the Great Lakes are all around us. So a lot of water sports, you know, human powered and then just also mechanized. But there's a little bit of everything. Skiing up north, paddling, biking, we've got it all. We just don't have a lot of relief.
Well tell us, you know, you've got a lot that you do. How did you fit in writing a book into your busy schedule?
Well, you know, I was really flattered to get the call from Mountaineers Books right around the start of the pandemic, a little bit after that. And they had asked me if I had heard about John Graham's book on outdoor leadership. And actually, I can see the cover. It was one of the first books that I had read when I started my outdoor career. Wow. And they said, yeah, we're thinking about kind of rewriting that book from a different perspective, and thought that you might be someone who could help us out with that. So really the book and the writing happened many years ago. And then due to the pandemic, there was a little bit of a stall with, I think, some supply chains and printing or things that are more complicated than I know. But yes, there's been kind of some crazy moving pieces in my life, especially last year, but the majority of the book had been written in, I think, 22 was kind of the major of the writing year.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about the other things you do, specifically the Association of Outdoor Recreation and Education, as well as what you do with Outdoor Adventure at the University of Michigan?
Yeah, I can certainly tell you that. So currently, I'm the executive director for the Association of Outdoor Recreation and Education, otherwise known as AOR.
And okay, I was wondering how you can pronounce that, AOR.
Yeah, AOR, not Eeyore, you know, Tigger's friend, but AOR. And in that work, you know, my job is to help those who facilitate outdoor recreation be great at their jobs. And when I say facilitate outdoor recreation, I mean college, university, military, nonprofits, for-profits, if you're in the business of taking someone outside, so think of like a Knowles or someone who works at a climbing wall or a rental center, that I'm trying to help them be the best ambassador to help facilitate those experiences for people. So my job is to help make sure that they've got tools to be successful, access to the products and industry trends, what's happening in our sphere of influence, and then also communicate things to a national level, like access to permitting or challenges that members might face with indemnifying the government to get a permit, like I said, or other complications in that space. So that's the work I do at AOR. And then in a previous life, I was the director of the University of Michigan's Outdoor Adventure Program. And in that program, we had trips and a climbing wall and a rental center. Again, maybe just a good example of who an AOR member is. So wow. Again, those people who are running those small outdoor education centers on a college campus or on a military base is who I serve.
Tell us a little bit about, the highlights of like your adventure past. Was this something, a family you grew up in that was outdoorsy and adventurous, or did you figure it out on your own?
Yeah. So I have three brothers and come from a very competitive and athletic family. So trying to keep up was a mainstay in life. And so, you know, our father was a hunter and my brothers did that. But I was exposed to the outdoors through summer camps. So through a YMCA camp, went there during the summer, followed my dad's footsteps and was a counselor there. And that is really where the passion, I think, started to be outdoors. From that, I ended up working out as a whitewater rafting guide in Glacier, Montana. So there was a chance to try something new. And that's where, I guess, really the passion for the outdoors came. Very different than, I think, any of the other aspects of my life with academics or with athletics, which are kind of some other mainstays for my personality and things that drive me a lot. Competitive athletics and being an athlete, and then the outdoors was kind of a juxtaposition to the other side of my life, my alter ego, you could say.
That's interesting. So there was, some time out west. Did you have to, obviously you came home at some point, or you brought this perspective back? Is there a story there?
Oh, there's lots of stories there, and there's lots of tears there, both directions. So I can tell you that when I mentioned that job in Glacier National Park, I worked at a place called Great Northern Whitewater. I cried the whole way out there. And that's actually the start of the book, was just feeling so scared and nervous to leave, the Midwest to tell my parents and, I'm going to go and be a whitewater rafting guide, and I'm going to, live in this teepee that I'm renting from the owner of the rafting company. And it's not really what was maybe acceptable for where I grew up and what my parents really maybe wanted me to do. They probably would have preferred an internship or something else like that.
Why did you feel so strongly about it?
Yeah.
And while being scared, that's the interesting part.
No, I just think it was, it just seemed like a wild hair, or just something I wanted to try. And, I guess I've mentioned it a couple of times, but being a competitive athlete, I was going off to college on a full ride athletic scholarship and always competing and being underneath the spotlight. And I think the outdoors for me just was a space I could be free and open and enjoy some, a sense of fullness and wholeness that wasn't based on accolades or achievement, but rather on being mindful of my impact on other people or on the environment or just great community. I think laughing loud and staying up too late was kind of a nice thing versus training and trying to focus on something else. So I think that's what made it so exciting. And the nervousness, I think, was the fear of letting people down, that I wasn't just, again, getting that internship or preparing for law school or going through all the things that were maybe deemed my path, kind of trying to walk my own path versus the one that I was being brought up in.
So not a lot of support from family or those around you, sounds like. What do you think gave you that confidence to keep going down this path unknown? Was it just that sense of that sense of fulfillment you got out there on the river at that time, or was it more than that?
Yeah, and I would say, I think support, 100% supportive family, just a different lane. I think just to be clear, and really... this is going to sound crazy, but I was just raised that I could do whatever I wanted to do as long as I was the best at it. So okay. As long as I could go out and
that'd mean I wouldn't be doing much.
Yeah. So I think that it was just so different. I think just stepping outside of, you know, this thought of high school to college and college to a professional job and saying, I want to work in this outdoor space, right? I want to save the trees and I want to be a vegetarian. And I want to, just those things were so different than maybe the path around me. In that way, it was just that tension. And then also, I guess probably I would name it now. And I don't think I had the words to name it before, being a female in a really male dominated household and whatnot. You know, I think I was raised thinking that I was going to do my thing and get married and have kids was maybe the traditional path. And yes, I have done those things, but also did it my way. And I think that was just a little bit of the excitement probably for both my parents and those around me to think, will she come back home? But they were summer experiences and whatnot. So really, it's just I haven't really thought about it in this context. So I'm glad you're asking these questions.
Oh,
it just seems
interesting.
You know, really wild, I think, you know, in hindsight. So thank you for asking those questions.
Yeah, and I got a few more if you don't mind. I try to ask questions that, you know, you're not going to always be asked. And obviously there's certain things we just got to set the foundation of, like, what, you know, who is Jeanette and what, you know, tell us the facts of the book, you know, that everyone's going to ask, but just a little bit different. So, you know, I always try, especially with someone on a book tour or getting hundreds of interviews, that this one's a little more unique at least. But so tell us about, you know, taking that path less traveled. Tell us a story about what something that happened. Maybe it was with guiding or just a personal experience that really confirmed, okay, I'm on the right path. Because a lot of times I feel like there's moments we remember. Maybe it's a sunset. Maybe it's just a great night out with friends that say, this is the right decision.
Oh, gosh, what a great question. My mind is racing right now, and I'm thinking of a couple of them, and they would all be mishmashed in there. No, I love it. And I think the reason I love that question is that when you're on the opposite side of something, right, hindsight is always 20/20. So it seems like, well, of course it all worked out. You know, look where I am now. I have you know, good health and a family and great relationships. And look at all this fortune I have and privilege.
And what you've accomplished.
Right. You know, and none of those things would have been possible without the support of all those people who told me I could do it when I couldn't and didn't believe in myself, you know, along that way. And I think to answer your question of those aha moments, I don't necessarily know if there's ever been really one I could put my finger on, but the thought of community, and I'm thinking right now about a night in Polebridge, Montana. And I worked, again, outside of Glacier National Park as a raft guide. And I think it was 4th of July. And a couple of the guys from the rafting company, we went up to Polebridge, which has a little mercantile. I think there was a bonfire. I know there were bad decisions that were being made, maybe some overindulgences. I think I remember maybe a thing of tequila in my back pocket, and I was learning how to cut wood with an axe. So again, really bad decisions,
yeah.
You know, fireworks that were happening. But there was also just this sense of these people who just helped me feel so full and alive. Again, that just with laughter and looking out for each other and smiling and just being a little raucous, you know, with the jokes and storytelling. And it just felt like such a fullness in a really remote location, so different and devoid of those traditional accomplishments, again, of grades or of status or of a job or of sports. It just was this fullness that I think is what the outdoors brings to me that can't be replicated in any other aspect of my life.
Beautiful story. I feel like when that happens now, those moments, there's a lot more self-awareness. Maybe it comes with age. Maybe it's just having gone through it. But, you know, years prior, early on, youth, it's like, oh, that happens. You look back, it's great. But now I can feel, okay, this is one of those moments right in the moment. And I'm like, soak it up. You know what I mean? Don't,
yes.
You know, put the phone down, you know, put away anything that's distracting and really soak it up. Because, you know, we're not guaranteed to have these all the time, you know. They're special. They're so special. And that's what life's about. That's awesome. Well, you know, with the book, The Outdoor Leader, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like some of the principals in here would want to prevent you from mixing maybe tequila and axe handling and fireworks. Tell us about this book. Who is this book for?
Yeah. You know, this book for is anyone who is on, is considering starting or considering starting their leadership journey, you know, and really what is, and I say leadership in all aspects, not confined to just an outdoor setting. It's for someone who wants to think about the choice of leadership, about decision making, about conflict and communication, all the aspects of leadership, but through palatable and fun stories that are mainly set up against mishaps. And I don't mean, and I'm laughing as I say this because my father, who has always been my hero, when I told him that I had been asked to write this book, he told me, Jeanette, you should call the book Where I Went Wrong. And he said, because no one wants to hear about your adventures and your summits and your rivers you've gone down. They want to hear the bad decisions you made and what you learned from them. And that, again, be it the tequila and the axe and the fireworks, would be a good example of that. It's all those times where I thought I had it right and I had it wrong. And it's not about being wrong. It's about that lesson that comes with it. Not double checking something and forgetting a rain fly can make for a pretty miserable night. But that lesson could also be brought forward in a leadership in your workplace. Not double checking something that you're responsible for. Taking accountability for your words and actions. Not addressing conflict when it happens in real time. On the water when you're trying to raft through a class 4 has big repercussions if you're not communicating well. The same thing happens in a work environment or in a family environment. You shared you had some little people, and I have offspring as well. And if you don't deal with some of the issues, the small issues, I think we can't ever get to the big issues. And so that's what this book is for.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. Well, you mentioned something before we recorded that leadership is often, you know, in the spotlight. And I thought that was interesting. And maybe I didn't word that right, but I thought that's interesting because I feel like even if we say we don't believe that, it's almost like our lizard brain goes back to, well, the loudest, the biggest, the most boisterous person is the leader in the room or in the situation. What is outdoor leadership to you? What are some of those qualities of a good leader?
Yeah, well, my mind just immediately went to, again, how my leadership growth and awareness has changed over time, because I truly thought, to your point, that's what the leader was, the captain, the president, the person in charge.
Always has the answers, always, exactly. You know, confident and all that.
Yeah. And I strived to be that person for a long time and received a lot of success and accolades for being a leader in that way until I realized that maybe I had it wrong and maybe I was missing some things leading that way. I was missing some nuances of dynamics in a group, or maybe my ego was too big and it was not allowing me to see something that was better for the greater whole. And that's where I think that those leadership lessons, you know, how can I not have it be about me, but be it about how I can encourage everyone to be their best selves is actually the best type of leadership, I think, or the best way to lead is helping everyone, every individual learn those lessons and step forward in their own way that they can contribute. And so there's really just been a transition, an evolution, I think, in my awareness of what I thought leadership was, how I tried to assimilate into those leadership ways that were often promoted. And then the leader I'm still trying to be, you know, I think it's a work in progress.
Yeah. It's speaking of that work in progress and something you mentioned, like this book is full of stories of lessons learned, you know, a lot of times the hard way, because that's how we learn lessons is doing things wrong. But we get to a point, I don't know about you, maybe you feel this way, especially as a leader and as like the identified leader in a situation or on an adventure or guiding. And, you know, you maybe there comes a point where it's like, I shouldn't be making mistakes at this point. And every time I feel like I make a big mistake, like I forget to record until 5 minutes into the episode or something, like really a rookie mistake, I will really beat myself up of like, I shouldn't be doing that at this stage. Am I actually good at this? And, you know, what room do leaders have, especially as they get more experience, to continue making mistakes?
Gosh, I would be wary of a leader who was not willing to lead in fear of making mistakes. So I guess I would answer your question. If someone is fearful of making a mistake because they're a leader, I don't necessarily know if that's a person I'd want to follow anymore, because I think they don't put themselves out there to learn from those lessons. I mean, Mason, I'm confident that I have made mistakes today, and it's just early in the morning here, Eastern.
Might be this call. Zone. We'll see.
Yeah. You never know, right? But if I don't try new things, if I don't try to be different than I was before, if I'm just looking for complacency to hold my spot as a leader, then I'm going to become irrelevant, and I'm going to miss opportunities to amplify other people or that of my team. And so I think leaders have to make mistakes. And I think that a leader has to make mistake to then pick themselves up and role model that it's okay to have failure, because I think in failure is where we learn how to lead.
Wow. So I know a lot of this book is coming from, you know, your personal experience and lessons you've learned. What do you think through the book writing process, which I've never written a book, but I hear it's just, you know, we have people that do like the hardest adventures in the world, and then they write a book about it, and they're like, oh, the book was 10 times harder than the actual adventure. I don't know if this was the case for you, but it's a daunting task, and you learn a lot. So what would you say is something that was a big revelation to you with outdoor leadership that maybe you learned from one of the people you talked to? Because I know you featured a lot of stories from other legends.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I learned in this book writing process was just going through only my fear and doubt and deprecation that I wouldn't have anything to offer, you know, both with this book and the stories that were told within it. And really, I give a lot of props to Emily White and Mary Metz, just the editors and the whole Mountaineers team. They were so supportive. And I think they probably should be compensated for counseling sessions in many respects in some of my phone calls of thinking, is this going to be good enough? And have I done it right? And I think it's actually a great connection to sometimes when we do these outdoor sports, you know, like, can I make it up the mountain? Or again, can I go down this river? Am I stroke strong enough? Do I know how to read this current? But really the writing of the book and those other lessons, it's all about the process. And I think that's where the true leadership comes. And I love these stories. I mean, I feel so fortunate to have this sphere of influence and these people that have contributed, you know, to this book. You know, I mean, you know, Jess Turner and Stacey Bear and, you know, Courtney Aber and Kenji Haratuni. I mean, these people they're pretty kick ass. I mean, let's be honest here. They're just good eggs. And that they would share with me and the readers their lessons learned or a perspective, a story that was meaningful to them in their outdoor experiences just really warmed me up and felt that this story could come from all different lens, not just a Jeanette Stosky perspective, but leadership from just other great leaders who I admire and have the privilege to work with or follow. And that's what just made it so rewarding, I think, just to hear their stories, you know, managing blisters to doing a small task, you know, leading change to handling yourself in a composure when your dog and your dog sling team has gone wild. There's a little bit of everything for everyone in this book.
Why would a non-adventure outdoor guide or someone aspiring to do that, what would interest them about this book?
Yeah, I think for people like that, I think it's a tangible and palatable introduction to leadership that isn't a heavy, we got it all figured out, here's how to do it. It's a guide. It's kind of like when you get lost in the backcountry. If you know where the river is and you know where the ridge is, you can probably find your way out through the valley. And this book does that. It kind of says, hey, have a taste of this and think about these aspects of leadership. And at the end of each chapter, there's a little takeaway, a reflective spot. So it allows the reader, if your experience in the outdoors is at your local park and in a local community, it doesn't have to be on Everest or, you know, doing the tour of Mont Blanc. It's mm-hmm. It can be wherever you are recreating and where you're leading. You can take those lessons and think about, how am I showing up at, with my family or my community or at my workplace? And I think that's what a reader is going to take away.
Can you talk about a little bit about chapter 8? It stuck out to me just from the title, even, you know, an adventure or ordeal. What is that about? What is that dealing with?
Yeah, I think that's funny that you grabbed that one, Mason. I think that when we look at some of the outdoor stories, we hear epic stories of people who endured just tremendous hardships. And I wanted to maybe shine a light that's not always good to glorify some of those hardships if there was poor decision-making that happened before it. And so for me, the difference between an adventure and ordeal kind of comes down to self-responsibility and preparation. If I'm prepared, if I have the right clothes, if I have a way to stay warm and dry, I can get wet and be a little uncomfortable, and it might be a little bit of an adventure, you know, and it might be, again, I might be in the backcountry and way out, but I can make it through. It might be a tough couple nights. It might be arduous, but it's not because of poor planning. It's because of something else. Whereas, I don't know, hiking light and fast and not bringing enough equipment because you're trying to do something epic, in being a little short-sighted, you know, and I'm not passing judgment on those who travel light and fast, but if you haven't thought it all the way through and then overextend where you should go and how long, then it becomes something different. And then you're toughing it out and you're writing a story about losing fingers or toes or something else, not being said because you could have done it a different way. You didn't quite think it. You didn't check the weather report. You know, you should have turned around when you knew you weren't going to make the summit, but you pushed on in a foolhardy way, not in a way that was intentional.
Interesting. What do you tell people? They're like, well, you're taking the fun out of adventure and creating stories, basically.
What do you mean by that? Just the...
Someone could be like, you know, well, being prepared for everything is also a downside where it's like nothing goes wrong. I would say my argument to that would be, because I don't want to put you totally on the spot, but I could see people saying that. Because I, you know, a lot of my favorite stories personally came from when things went wrong. However, you know, there's definitely a balance. These would not be fun stories had something gone slightly different and someone didn't make it out. And I would say this, you know, if you're training for a marathon, you know, running 26.2 miles is hard enough. Don't make it more difficult by doing it backwards or doing it barefoot or adding this element that doesn't need to be there. The challenge itself is tough enough, and that's going to be a great story. Don't make it unnecessarily difficult.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, for kind of clarifying the question. And I think I even used the word wet blanket. Like, I don't want to be a wet blanket. I know that I'm intense and relentless and persistent about things and have an orderly way, but that there's still problems that happen. And bad things happen all the time in the outdoors and have those experiences. So it doesn't take away that, but it helps you be better prepared, you know, and a good example would be, you know, I'm a survivor of a mountaineering accident. You know, I had a rappelling accident where I was crushed by a boulder in a really remote location in the Wind River Range. And we were all prepared. We had done all the work. We had a great high performing outdoor community, but these things happen. And they happen when you go and you recreate in places that don't have a safety net. And, you know, again, even with being prepared, that's the beauty of Mother Nature, is that she always wins. You know, rivers rise and rocks fall and avalanches happen, and we respond to them. We didn't invite the accident, but we had all the tools to be successful and navigate the evacuation. And I'm here today and I have full function of my leg because of the decision-making and the leadership of the people who were on that program. And so I'm not one to remove the fun, but I am one to say, hey, if we can prevent these blisters from happening, you know, we're gonna do the right thing. If we can prevent getting Giardia, we'll bring the right filter. That doesn't take away the fun for me.
You don't find Giardia and blisters fun? Huh, weird.
Having gone through both of you, no, I can speak. Having had both, those are anti-fun things in my book.
You know, that's, and I think that, thank you. That's really a great answer, that no matter how prepared you are, Mother Nature is Mother Nature and things will go wrong. I mean, if you put yourself out there in the sense of adventure and in the outdoors, something will go wrong. So structure and systems speak very type A personality. How does a type B person function in the outdoors? I'm very type B. You know, things just a little more go with the flow, a little more, you know, let's see what happens. Have you seen that style of leadership work very well in the outdoors, or does it really need to be a little more of a type A system?
No, everyone is welcome in the outdoors. So I would gladly recreate with you, Mason. We can go type A and type B out there. And I also want to say that I know that my personality has both, right? So when I'm
Okay.
in a designated leadership position, I definitely structures are important, just like running my nonprofit or, maybe running my household with children. Myself, I mean, my husband and kids could tell you, like, I'm spontaneous and like last minute things, but I get to rely on their systems and structures to keep me in line in that way. So there's definitely a balance there. But I think about your question about type B people and working with them and leading with them. And a lot of my co-leaders have been that person. And actually I do speak about that in the book. When I was in New Zealand leading an expedition, my co-leader was absolutely fantastic. And as we were helping these young people that we were leading be the leader of the day, I wanted to prevent everything from happening. For example, rain and wind. I wanted to tell them, hey, it's getting cold, put your coats on, we want to prevent hypothermia. And my co-leader said, you got to just let them figure it out, Jeanette. You got to like not tell them to put the rain fly on. You can see it, but that's for them to learn. And if you take away that learning from them, and in my mind, I was thinking, but I don't want to have to deal with hypothermia tonight.
Right. It's like it's
And
going to be more work on me. You know what I mean? That's
correct.
why I don't want to do it.
I can tell you in the moment, there was some tension there. And I had to talk with my co-leader about it. But in hindsight, I just realized the brilliance that he had to offer and realized that maybe I was taking away from someone else's learning and trying to lead them. And some of these lessons just had to be learned in a different way. So I think it takes both.
You know, we see that as parents. You know, the kid, you know, we you want to be like, you need a jacket right now. This ain't a negotiation. Put on your daggum jacket. It's 20 degrees outside. And sometimes it's just like, all right, we'll go out there and you'll see the error of your ways pretty quickly. But guess what? I'll have the jacket ready for you. So,
Exactly,
yeah, they
exactly.
just
Yep,
got
you
to
got
learn
it.
on their own. That's funny. Well, you know, what would you say, having seen and led so much, seen so many different types of leadership. What would you say is one of the most underappreciated skills of a leader?
Gosh, humility was the word that just kind of jumped up into my head, and I can actually think of a co-leader I led with, and I don't know why humility popped into my head with the bathroom or the kitchen setup talk, but somehow that is where my head just went. So I'll just say that I have had the privilege of leading with co-leading with a lot of men, and I love it when the man in the co-leading team takes on responsibilities that are often left to the female co-lead. So example, kitchen setup or preparing the food, or even going over how to dispose, menstrual products or things like that. And I really love it when I work with a colleague who allows me to take on maybe the technical aspects of the leadership or to be the first to demo something. And so I think again, going back to your question about what are the great aspects of a good leader, the leader who sees and makes an intentional decision to step into a leadership role that is not what everyone expects has lasting impact. So again, I mean, I know that looking at your depth and breadth of the podcast that you've put out here, you've had a lot of people adventuring and leading and doing things, but just think about that. A male co-leader teaching 18 to 24-year-old men and women how to dispose of waste properly and actually talking about menstrual products in the backcountry, but that coming from the man really sets a space that this person is approachable, can listen, any health issues doesn't the females don't have to go to Jeanette, the males go to him. I just love that. And I love working with a leader who does that in an office environment or, even last night at my son's lacrosse team meeting, is it the dad who says, I'm going to organize the banquet? versus a role that always kind of goes to the other gender. I think that's something that I am learning and watching as I continue to grow and lead that I admire the most.
Well, speaking of that change, what would you say, what are some trends or some shifts you've noticed in outdoor leadership in your career? Has there been any just cultural changes, or, you know, maybe it's not even that big. Maybe it's just shifts in how we think about the outdoors or think about nature and adventure itself.
Yeah. Well, maybe even just coming from where we just were speaking about, even in those roles, I think one of the things I wish I would change from the past is how I maybe tried to assimilate into some of those typical leadership characteristics. So you talk about cooking for your household or doing some of those things, which are great. And I know that in earlier parts of my leadership, I thought I just had to be the best climber or paddler or the strongest hiker to be accepted. And so I think, you know, I will own that I was chasing after something that was probably never attainable just to assimilate and be accepted. And I use that as a segue for your last question, because that's maybe the biggest change I think I'm evolving through, and I think the industry is evolving through. I think we used to decree, this is what an outdoor leader is. They look like this. This is their resume. These are the programs they've gone on. And your job is to try to fit into that mold. And I've tried really hard to fit into that mold. And then I realized that maybe I was doing it wrong, because the people behind me were seeing me assimilate into a role they didn't want to have any part with. And I was actually contributing to the problem by trying to be, again, I'll just like as a female leader, trying to be in the boardroom or leading this way, you know, and just, oh, Jeanette's made it because she's working with all these men. Well, some of the young women behind me probably were like, why are you doing it that way? Why don't you lead in a more authentic way or a more vulnerable way? And it's taken me a long time to release what I've told myself leadership was and into a space that it would be. And that's what I see happening in the industry. So I see people accepting finally that there's many different ways to recreate, and people can recreate how they want, where they want, with who they want. And it's still recreation. It doesn't have to be shouldering the backpack and doing a 31-day course, you know, going to Europe or, you know, again, paddling a class four. It can be, you know, birding or 5K running or forest walking or, you know, you name it, you can do it. And if it's outdoors, you are an outdoor leader. And I think that's one of the biggest changes that I'm seeing and I'm trying to participate and amplify with, reconstructing what we know about outdoor leadership.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. Get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks. As you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason, Prize Picks has something for every fan. From basketball, hockey, to League of Legends, and everything in between. You can even pick individual players, LeBron, Caitlin Clark, Connor McDavid, Jude Bellingham, all in the same entry. Prize Picks is the best way to get in on the action of sports in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. I'm a big basketball fan personally, so that's where I'd focus my attention with Prize Picks. So if you want to try it and get in on the action, download the app today and use the code ASP for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today, Prize Picks, and use the code ASP for Adventure Sports Podcast for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. Like the scope of what recreation outdoors is expanding. Therefore, the leadership to help lead the communities experiencing it in that vast scope is also a widening. Like you need birders, that people that can take people out, or people that can go on trail walks in the morning versus a 31-day backpacking trip, or kayaking at a very slow pace on the Gulf Coast that I'm used to, and sauntering almost. Like you need all the paces as well as the scope in what the activities are. That's interesting, and you're noticing that. That's cool. That's really cool. Well, what would you say is a commonality between all that variety that you can now have in the outdoors What's a commonality in the challenges that you often see with outdoor leaderships? I don't know if you get asked a lot, like, hey, Jeanette, how'd you deal with this? Is there like a, here's what you're going to deal with almost without question, every experience or every time you go out or whatever it is. Is there a very common challenge you often see that, kind of throws people for a loop?
I think my answer to that would be the challenges, leaders redefining and saying, I don't know. You know, I think that's the challenge, is that we that old model of leadership of this is how you do it. And if you don't do it this way, you're not recreating correctly, or you're not outdoors enough. I think the commonality now is someone saying, I don't have an answer for this, but I can work on figuring it out. And I think that's the unique spot where we are. And that's what makes me most excited about recreation today, is people allowing themselves to kind of put our egos aside and say, there might be a different way to do this. There might be a different way to recreate. So I think that's what I'm watching. And I know I'm speaking probably in a really visionary fashion, but again, if we allow lots of people to recreate in different ways, then we have to be able to say without judgment that how they're recreating is different than maybe how we know to recreate, but it's not good or bad. So the commonality, again, coming back to that, would just be an admittance that there's new opportunities for people to recreate how they want, and it's not the same way. You know, I wish I could give you just one quick story to try to wrap that concept up.
But totally.
We
love stories here. So yeah, anytime there's like a story to share that's not like spoiling the book or maybe just giving us a teaser, throw that in, please.
No, I'm just thinking about, you know, I mean, like skiing, or just something like how I was brought up with how people recreate, like how my brothers would perceive recreation would be. And it has to be, you know, with this pack and this outfit, and you have to go up north, and it has to be
intense,
and you have to do all that. And maybe that's not true when you can go and recreate on man-made snow to go ski or try a new sport in a different way, or go and experience something during the day and come back. It doesn't have to be this old narrative. I think that's what I'm just trying to say. And I think that's the exciting part of this all. You know, I'm struggling here just to give like one challenge, but if the biggest challenge I had when I was at the University of Michigan running the outdoor program was tenting and tenting arrangements and how people wanted to tent, you know, do you mix gender or not mix gender? Those were really big challenges because of policies, right? And this is, you know, 20 plus years ago. Well, now, because people maybe do or don't recreate as much anymore, especially if you're an 18 to 24 year old, what is going to make them most comfortable in an outdoor tenting situation, and thinking about it from a different lens versus boys in this tent, girls in this tent, or, you know, how like you can't have co-ed tenting. Those things are just going away. And we're thinking, what will make someone have the best experience while they're camping? Do they need really thick pads to sleep through the night and extra heavy stuff and four more layers of coats and different food that's not just freeze dried? And if that's what they need to be more comfortable outdoors, let's give it to them so they have that positive experience and not make them say they need MREs to have a good outdoor experience. Hmm. That makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense.
There's just, it's not so black and white and
correct,
right and wrong and limited even. Like it's such, I'll tell this. I think this, what came to my mind, it was a big revelation for me when I realized I don't have to go shoot something or kill something to go have a good time in the outdoors, which was hunting and fishing. And mm-hmm. I'm not against it at all, but that was just like, you had to do that to go into nature. That was what a man did, and it was men. And I remember one time going out hunting with my dad, and we obviously, you know, didn't kill anything again because we weren't that good. I love you, Dad, but we were not great hunters. And I remember thinking, I'm like, why don't we just go for a walk out here? It's so beautiful. And I was a kid, and it was a huge revelation. And then once I got out on my own, I was just like, I'm not even bringing that stuff. Now I've come back and I enjoy fishing and whatnot, but it's not a necessary thing. And knowing that there was scope to this, it wasn't so limited, was really eye-opening. And once that momentum started, well, it hasn't stopped, because now I'm talking to, you know, have a podcast about the whole topic. So, you know, it was really eye-opening. And I think once people realize there's more than what they thought there was, it's almost like that scope just continues to open because they know, well, they'll probably never reach the limits of it. So that's what came to mind when you were talking about it.
I love that. I love that on the opposite side from my lane, Mason, and thank you for sharing that. You know, for someone who grew up with hunting and fishing around me, but something that I know how to do, but I haven't participated so fully in it, that not judging that, right? So a lot of people on the human nature side of it might poo-poo or say, gosh, you know, those people are hook and bullet, might be doing it a different way. But that's the important part. They're just doing it a different way. They're enjoying the outdoors as it works for them. And I think that's, again, a really exciting thing. And we don't have to be in different camps to all enjoy the outdoors, which is divisive, right?
Something that I think keeps a lot of people who enjoy adventure and maybe have the desire to take others or bring others or become more of a leader in whatever that means. Maybe it's inviting their friends camping for the weekend, or maybe it's, you know, hey, let's get all of our kids together and go paddling. That's like a situation I find myself in. I feel like a lot of people probably feel like they need to be experts in something to be a leader. Like they have to know everything. They have to know every tree. They've got to have an answer for everything before they get to that point. What would you say to that person?
Yeah, that's going to be, they're going to probably never get outside for that person. You know, they're going to be stuck inside watching YouTube videos of other people recreating if that's the bar.
Yeah, that's me sometimes.
I love it. Well, I think that's a fallacy, right? I think that's something that I tried to speak to early. If we only allow ourselves to try things when we are good or great at them or have expertise, we're missing out on a lot. But I also think we have to be clear of where our boundaries are. So I think that's what leadership is. The leadership is the boundary part. I don't know how to do all these things, but I'm excited to go recreate. Let's go to a spot where we can drive. We could have the cars nearby. You modify the experience if you're not willing to go all in, right? And I think that's where there's an opportunity for making sure that you try new things and gain that confidence in that experience. So that's what I would say. We would... You know, I haven't done a lot about, I haven't tried to think of what sports I haven't done yet. I've not ever gone scuba diving, and I've done a lot of other recreations, but you know, the only way I'm going to learn how to scuba dive is to scuba dive. I can't become an expert unless I learn how to use the regulator and put the tanks on and get out there. And it's going to require me making that a priority to go do it. Probably won't lead that trip, you know?
Cause I think a lot of these sports only happen when we invite others, and just help others experience it. But you know, that can be scary to bring others into your world, especially if you're not, you know, you're getting into it yourself. What are some basics that someone would need to know before they basically invite others?
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as like planning an adventure, I think it's just being clear and candid on no matter what you're trying to do. So again, you talked about recreating with other families or young people, or again, whoever's going out, is where they want to go and what activity they want to do, making sure they've got proper items, you know, with them to, you know, if they're camping out, to stay warm and dry, or enough food. All the basic skills, I think, of outdoor campcraft are something that someone would need to know. But aside from that, I think it comes with a good attitude, and open communication is really going to be the key. And again, I know we're trying to set this up where anyone could take this lesson and apply it. But if you want to go out to your local park, if you're going to a state park, or going to go see one of the national parks, you know, knowing where you're going, who you're going with, what you need to bring, is pretty easy to do. Now, hiking on an extended day course when you're in that national park, that might take a little additional planning and some additional experience. And that's why you can hire someone who has additional expertise or go with someone who has that knowledge. But you got to start somewhere, Mason. I mean, that's the beauty of this all, is you just got to start down the path a little bit.
I heard this from someone I interviewed for another show I do. And she said yesterday, she goes, the worst thing to do is nothing. And I was like, yeah, like that was so simple, but it was like so powerful. I'm like, yeah, the worst thing you can do is nothing. So taking any action is better than that. Just get the car moving and then you can steer it. Tell us, and as we wrap up, I know we're at the last couple of minutes, tell a story. Let's hear a story about a hard lesson learned, but it has a positive ending. Like, I don't want to be like, yeah, it's that, you know, I didn't do this and a whole, you know, thing happened that ended poorly. Let's not do that.
Oh, gosh.
A happy lesson. Like, you know what? I learned conflict resolution through this.
They're all happy lessons.
Okay,
they're
good.
All
good. And maybe this recently to show that even an expert is still learning.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, how about if you want to go recent, I can tell you this story. So I am actually 122 days out of having a major surgery on my leg. And
is this from that accident?
No, this is a whole nother adventure that I've been on this last year. So last year, 2023, I lost both my parents.
Oh gosh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's been kind of a wild ride. So, and I had a huge tumor in my left calf, and it turned out to be benign, but I had major surgery on my left leg. So I'm telling you that today with emotion, and I think it's great because I am a really passionate person. But today I was at physical therapy before this interview, and I was just thinking about all the things I can do right now. And I can walk. I have a little bit of a limp. I can squat down a little bit more, and I can get some range of motion in my leg. But again, to your point of a hard lesson, you know, 4 months ago, I was in a boot, and I was unable to bear weight for over 30 days. And I'm a really active person. And right then I couldn't see where I am now. All I could see is what I couldn't do. And, you know, I was using a walker and I had to rely on other people for help and support. And then 2 months ago, I started walking with a cane and I was able to do more things. And I guess my point here to bring it back into leadership and change is that we always think that we're stuck somewhere, or we can't get through something, or we can't do something. We can't try something new. And really, on this journey back from this most recent surgery, I'm not trying to get back to where I was. I'm just trying to get better, and I'm going to surpass who I was 4 months ago. And I'm going to be more healthy and more fit. And I'm going to be a better leader of myself and my attitude and the people that I get to interact with every day because of this accident. Like, it's actually a gift. And I think that is what I would offer. You know, I think in our parting words is that these things happen in the back country or in the front country. And I truly think that if we can allow ourselves grace and a longer runway, we will see change and growth, and we get better and better every day, physically or emotionally or as a leader. And it just never stops, Mason. That's the beauty of growth and leadership is, if it's not one thing, it's another. And I welcome that. I don't want to avoid these things. I welcome them.
Oh, sounds like a very tough year. I'm so sorry. It's, you know, as much as you want life to be this wonderful, long adventure out in nature, like, life just happens. Things happen.
Yeah.
And it's unavoidable. And the more you talk about it, the more you realize, oh my God, I'm not alone. Everybody else is dealing with this too. And trying to navigate who they are through all this. And our experiences outdoors, gosh, we know this, you know, adventure helps us get through that. We look back on those challenges and those times and those conflicts or those mountains, literally, that we faced. And,
yeah,
you know, that's why we do this. You know, that's why you get out there as often as you do and take people with you, is just to instill those lessons so that when these challenges do come, you're way more ready otherwise than you would be otherwise.
You're exactly right.
So yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, no, I think it's all good things. And yes, it's been a wild ride, but I think coming back to the start of our conversation, you know, my parents know that the outdoors makes me happy, and I know they're proud.
That's awesome. You know, you know, going and sleeping in that tent in Montana, you know, many years ago, thinking, what is our daughter doing? You know, that all came around to
exactly.
This, the latest iteration of the story, this book. So
that's right.
Awesome. Well, thank you. We appreciate it. We're going to point people to Mountaineers. We're friends with Mountaineers. So Mountaineers Books, I think it's mountaineersbook.org. It'll all be linked in the show notes. Anywhere else you want to point folks? I know you got a website and.
Yeah, it's AOR. And then the other website, Mason, is Leading Valiantly. So yep. Leading Valiantly is my new kind of landing page, and then the work that I'm doing with executive coaching and leading adventures. There's a Norway trip and an Italy trip there. and public speaking and other events to that end. So leadership and growth and leading valiantly, trying hard and going where we haven't been before.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.